Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 3rd edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture delivered a double-barreled surprise this week to the commodity markets with its grain stocks and acreage reports. We'll talk about these numbers and so much more today with our guest, including Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, Jackie Vanks of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, and Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, let's begin our discussion with these items. The United States Department of Agriculture this week released the grain stocks and acreage numbers. For acreage, it shows soybeans at 84.83 million acres. That compares to 76.53, by the way, from last year. The March estimate at 81.49, again this year at 84.83, so up sharply from the March estimate. These numbers are outside of most everybody's thought process, and I'm wondering what you thought of that number, whether you really think, Matt Bennett, that farmers have planted so many acres of soybeans.
Well, I've thought all along that we had big acres of beans coming. As you know, I definitely can say that I was surprised by 84.8. It was higher than what I'd thought. But I wasn't surprised, you know, that we had a surprising number. Now, how many acres have we actually planted and, you know, what all has happened since the survey? To me, I think that there's a little bit of adjustment to be made still, and there might be a few bean acres actually, you know, that either didn't get planted or flat out won't get harvested because we've obviously had some extreme weather scenarios. But, you know, as far as where we're going to end up, I think it's a very real possibility that we're going to end up with enough acres of beans that it's not going to take a huge yield, and we're going to have a pretty big crop.
Jackie Vakes, did you look at where these were from?
Where the bean acres were from?
Yeah.
In all honesty, I didn't take a whole lot of a look at it, but I can tell you that one of the things that I had heard about just before the report was released was that they just have shipped an immense amount of bean seed out into the Kansas area and into some of the Nebraska area. And the Kansas guys are planning on planting it after wheat, and, you know, either wheat that didn't make it or wheat that they're going to take off. And so it might explain for some of the increase in acres. But I was pretty blown away. I didn't expect it to be that big either.
Dan Zwicker, when you put it and the grain stocks numbers together, what does it tell you about the soybean market that I know you were surprised by, but that you have new information now to tally some data with?
Well, I don't know if you got, the only information that you really have is that the old crop supply situation is not as tight as the trade was thinking prior to the report with the 60 million bushel fine back. Now that will be reflected as a negative residual number on the July report. So that's going to loosen up the old crop balance sheet. It's still going to be fairly snug, but it's going to be loose enough that the trade feels fairly comfortable that we'll get by until we get some early bean harvest maybe coming out of the southern areas of the growing region. Now, new crop, I think what surprised everybody so much is that USDA didn't have, the trade was expecting to see some higher acres based upon last year's numbers. I'm not too sure USDA's got last year's numbers right, let alone this year's numbers right. But the reason everybody missed it is because USDA really didn't recognize that those large of acres on the March report, and then that's why it was such a bearish surprise. But when you start talking 84.5 or 84.4, and I think that's what it was, and they're using a harvested maybe of 84, that's going to create a very burdensome supply if we, you know, do get a yield in this mid-40s level. But we got a long ways to go before that can be assured. But, yes, we're going to dig ourselves a pretty big hole in beans. And the result of that will be sharply lower prices.
Well, they are sharply lower, Jackie Bakes. A long ways to go for this week. Was down 94 and what, a half cent for the new crop November. Do you suppose the further we get into the season, the deeper this will go? Is it far enough down at $11.33.5, or do we have to go to 10.33.5, 9.33.5?
Well, no, I'm not in the 9 camp at this stage of the game. But I think when you look at the big picture, people were very hesitant to do any hedging on beans at all. They just didn't want to do anything. So I think you're going to have guys on any bounce that we get, they're going to come in and sell it. And, you know, it'll hold down any number that any opportunity to go a lot higher unless something changes. I looked at, the 162% retracement off of the June 2008 to December 1st of 2008, that takes us down to 10.03. And I don't think that is probably outside of the realm of possibility. But I don't see a lot happening. We've got USDA report next week Friday. And that's where the rumor was that the trade was trading, that we were going to go from 325 million bushel carryout to a 400 million bushel carryout. If we don't come in with a 400 million bushel carryout, then I think, we'll stabilize for a little bit anyway.
This would be
for the new crop. Yeah, for new crop.
Up to 400 million bushels.
That's what they've been talking about.
When you think about this, Matt Bennett, from the elevator operator's point of view, and you've talked with operators across your system and probably others, do they believe that there are this many acres out there, and what impact will it have on storage availability for both corn and soybeans? It's a big crop.
Right. That's a great question. I think that, most people that I've talked to, either in the grain industry or in the seed industry, actually feel fairly confident that bean acreage is awfully high and is expected to be awfully high. We are, kind of leaning on, as has been alluded to, a fair amount of, following wheat type bean acres. Who knows whether we'll be able to go ahead and get the double crop beans in or not. But as far as storage implications go, Todd, bottom line is, if we go ahead and, I've been saying this lately, if we end up with 70% good to excellent, a month from now, we're going to have storage problems. There's a lot of storage been built in the last few years, but bottom line, in certain areas, regionally speaking, you're going to have a lot of storage issues because a corn crop of this magnitude, along with a big bean crop, it could be pretty tough.
Compounded by the idea that corn won't be moving from the old crop bins out as well?
Well, the bottom line on that, too, guys have wondered why basis has been so hot on corn all the way through, and it hasn't just been, hasn't been because we've been super tight. It's been more function of guys have been awfully tight-fisted, and now I feel like a lot of guys are feeling handcuffed with this huge drop in prices, and I'm not so sure the basis is going to be able to do enough to pry that loose.
From your perspective down in Louisiana, will they be calling for grain, Dan?
Well, there's we still got a lot of corn on the books to move this summer, so they're going to need some inventory to continue to keep those ships from sitting empty. And of course, the ethanol industry is making good profits. So there is a strong demand for cash corn. I think the reseller is very short. I'm not too sure he's got his hands available on that yet. And we'll have to see how that goes. But, we might as well get a low put in this thing and start talking about some big low numbers, because if we're going to have a crop, 170 bushel corn and 46, 47 bushel beans, and we're going to run into storage problems, then we might as well start talking about some realistic numbers on the downside, because they aren't going to be sharply lower. Mm-hmm. And maybe that would be a good reason, a good way to maybe get a bottom put in this market, because we'll have to see how the growing season goes, but there is no doubt about it. I think you'll see the crop rating levels actually decline in Illinois come Monday afternoon. If you take an airplane view of the corn crop north of Interstate 80, it doesn't look very good, let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, I could agree with you, because I've been up that direction. My concern, I guess, is how confident will all the traders who are coming down I-57 to go on vacation in Missouri over 4th of July, which they usually do to combine looking at the crop, think when they get into Champaign County and go south. I mean, you just have fields on fields on fields that are like you could lay a level on top of them, you know, that are actually tasseling. And so, you know, I don't know how excited they'll be about even looking at a lower crop rating and thinking about that. But I got a question for the two of you. I'm hearing conflicting things between, if you look up in the Dakotas, Burlington is saying, you know, they'll probably have more grain cars, but there may not have more grain cars. I'm hearing down here they're saying we're definitely not going to have enough grain cars for a normal size crop. What are you guys hearing?
Go ahead, Dan, if you want to go first.
No, you go ahead. Here's
what our situation is. We've booked a fair amount of stuff to be railed out, you know, right here at the start of the fall. And so we're expecting to be able to get what we need. But bottom line is, if you look at their basis levels up there, as you know, has been widely reported, their basis levels are atrocious, and partially because they can't get rail cars. I don't know when that situation is going to change for them. I guess I'm not a good enough expert on the upper Midwest to figure that out. But bottom line, in our neck of the woods, whenever we've been asked to get a train, it's come in pretty much on time, and we haven't had any issues.
But you're not using the BNSF, right? So it's locomotives, I think, rather than rail cars, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah.
And you'd be using what, UP? What are you using?
Well, you know, CN.
Right, just a different, but you're not using the BNSF, which
right,
I think is
correct.
The biggest problem in the right. Northwest.
Right.
So the Northwest seems to me that it has a problem that's going to spread to the rest of the Corn Belt.
That's what I was alluding to.
Is that right? Because right now they're full. Well, I don't know how full, but they're pretty full. They can't move it. Nope. Their basis is atrocious. And they've got a big crop coming on. So they don't have any place to put it, and they've got another crop putting. They're full, and they've got no place else to put it. I don't know what that means exactly, but it's got to be ugly, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would, and you know, the part that's really bad is so much of their grain actually goes to the west in most cases. And, you know, if you've got no place to go there, and your closest spot is 500 miles away to haul your grain, what do you do? You know, if you can't get rail, so
you take it down the Illinois and Mississippi, and you improve the bases in central Illinois and on the Ohio River, right, Dan?
Well, I think we need to maybe go back to the farm program, grain reserve, loan reserve, build new bins. That'll satisfy it. That'll put a bottom in it.
You know, what I was shocked at on the acreage report was, you know, they'd originally said the Dakotas were going to, you know, give up like 1.3 million acres of corn up in the North Dakota, and they only gave up 800,000 acres.
I don't think USDA's numbers are right on that. I
wonder,
I would
too.
Question that from my information. I think, and see, the thing of it is, you know, why would anybody believe USDA's numbers this week if the numbers weren't right in March or in December? I mean, just because USDA came out with some numbers, I mean, they've been wrong more often than they've been right over the past 5 years. So I think, you know, it's questionable whether or not these numbers are right to begin with. So there's a lot of adjustments, I think, that's going to come down the road. And we'll go from there.
Well, if these are wrong, then the surveys that were sent out were filled out wrong by producers.
Right.
Well, that's part of USDA's problem, surveys. They don't have no boots on the ground, and they got to rely on survey information, and then they still have to fudge that survey. You know, I don't know how much fudging they do with it, but they do have to massage it. And then Probably some producers do deliberately, try to mislead the USDA. I mean, the USDA hasn't really been the farmer's friend. Now, they would like you to believe they are, but they with their variability in reports over the past several years, it hasn't been a very good indicator of price direction or telling the trade how to trade the market, with these wide swings and some scary reports. So, I think the farmers are disgusted with a lot of these USDA reports. I think the trade is disgusted with them because they are highly variable, and they need to find a way to get their arms around that.
Yeah, well, I guess my tweet earlier in the week thanking USDA for all the hard work probably was on.
Well, no, I think I would take the opposite side from the standpoint that I'm not going to say USDA is our angels or anything else. But take a look at, when you look at the variations and the swings in these reports, when has it occurred? It's occurred since we started with ethanol. We didn't have a good way of taking, keeping track of DDGs that were moving. We ended up in a drought, and so I think that there's a lot of other things that were going on in addition to USDA. They've tried to make some improvements, and they did have 15,000 face-to-face, supposedly face-to-face contact for this particular report. So they did have people out in the country in some places, but I think that they put out like 71,000 survey requests, and, they don't get anywhere near as many back. So how do you do it? You can only guess. That's, you take percentages and you look at what it's been over the years, and that's where you go from. All we're really looking for is guidance, right? I don't know.
Well, go ahead, Don.
Oh no, I'm good. What do you have to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I agree pretty much with what both of these guys are saying. And in a nutshell, I think all of us are a little bit skeptical. I know that, there's been times in the past that I've taken a stand somewhere to Dan and been on the same panel with Dr. Good, and we had a talk after the meeting, and he told me, basically, historically speaking, here's where the USDA has come in, and you need to realize this. And I know from a historical perspective, they've been fairly well accurate. Now, I do think, when you look at this sort of report this year, it's kind of an outlier. And so I'm going to kind of go back to what Dan said. In March, they weren't even close, because I think a lot of people assumed maybe the plannings that preventative plannings from last year, maybe we wouldn't have so many less of them this year. And so then you come out with really a total acreage number that was kind of surprising for people. Now, I'm still of the opinion we have huge bean plantings, but, I had to feel like maybe they were a little high on corn plantings, but I guess I don't know. I think it goes back a little bit to the first of the month, and I think that a lot has happened since then, and some real extreme weather patterns that, are probably going to have an adverse effect on harvested acres, let alone maybe some planted acres.
Well, and I think, when you look at the harvested acre situation, Matt, they dropped harvested acres already from 91.9% down to 91.5% on this report.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already reflecting some of that. But let's get to the real point here. This is planting intentions. This is not actual acreage. And if you look at the end of the report, there's a 10% deviation on this report. Why? Because the farmer doesn't even know for sure what he's going to do at this point in time. There's a deviation on this report. So, everybody seems to take this number and think it's concrete. It's not.
You, of course, are listening to Commodity Week. Our guests include Jackie Vakes, who you just heard. She's with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Matt Bennett is with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. And Dan Quicker from CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana. Now, here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago for the week. The nearby contractor July soft red winter wheat finished at $5.68. That was down 17.25. The high price at 584.25. The low at 555.5. July corn in Chicago finished at $4.17. The weekly trade down 26 cents, with a high at 443.75 and a low at 416. The December contract to finish at $4.15. It lost 32 cents on the week, had a high price at 446.5 and a low at at $4.14 and a half. July soybeans for the week finished at $13.87 and three quarters. The weekly change Friday to Friday was 44 and a quarter cents lower. The high price at $14.48, the low at $13.72 and three quarters. That for the old crop July soybeans. November beans settled at $11.33 and a half. A very sharp 94 and a half cent drop Friday to Friday, with a high price at $12.36 and a low at $11.32. Bean meal on the week in the July contract finished on the weekly trade down $22.80, and bean oil at $38.56. For the week, finished $1.42 lower. Live cattle futures from the CME Group in the October contract on the week finished higher, up $2.55 at $156.90. The August feeder cattle for the week finished higher as well at $200.17 and 62 and a half cents, up $3.30, and the lean hogs in the August contract at $131.60 finished $1.77 and a half cents higher.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the July 3rd edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, continuing our conversation with Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Matt Bennett. Let's talk a little bit about what producers may want to consider doing. Most of them will be thinking, Jackie Vakes, at this time, that crop insurance will take care of their ills. Well, not completely, but that's the only option they have. Are there other things that they might consider?
Well, you know, when you talk about crop insurance, that's all I've heard from guys up in along that Iowa and Minnesota border, is that they're farming for crop insurance now, and they're hoping like heck the price just falls apart, because it'll be something that'll work for them. But you know, when you look at the guys who have a really good crop, and Kevin Van Trump put out a really good piece, something I'd been working on, but he beat me to it. So, you know, it's one of those things. He said, if you have 180 APH and you've got 85% crop insurance and you produce 170 bushels, we have to be below 415 for you to get a payment. 180 bushels below 392, this is on futures. 190 below 371, 200 below 353, and 210 below 336 before you even generate a payment. So I think that what we now have to deal with, especially with guys who are looking perhaps down the throat of a lot of added bushels, is what can we do to maybe protect some price on those bushels at the same time. And, you know, I like to look to puts, because I can do deeper in the money options, you know, and be able to protect a higher price than I could do with futures. But, you know, you have to have an individual conversation with somebody and figure out where they're at and what they're willing to do.
Matt Bennett, did you see the piece Gary Schnittke produced this week that suggested that the change on Monday would push farmers from making a little money this year to losing money on their farms on a per-acre basis?
Yes, I did. And I think, you know, I've been going over the same sort of scenarios that Jackie has. I mean, I've talked to my guys, and they've said, you know, that's a pretty tough thing to say whenever we've got such a great crop growing at this point. Obviously, there's a lot of weather to go between now and then, but if you're going to tell me that you're looking at 200-plus yield, then to me, your chances of getting an insurance payout are somewhere between slim and none, unless we have just a catastrophic collapse. But Gary's exactly right. You know, if you put a profitability spreadsheet together with the kind of input costs we have this year, if you don't have a whole lot of hedging done yet, you're looking at a pretty bleak scenario, unless you just have an enormous yield, because it's pretty tough at sub $4 corn and sub $11 beans to pencil huge profits, or any profit.
Dan Zwicker, have you thought about this much? I know it's outside of your bailiwick at this point, where you're located there at Mandeville, Louisiana.
Well, I don't like to give specific advice because of my role in a grain company, but when you take into account that you're, you know, depending depend upon your situation, but if you do have a yield way above your average yield, you know, and even though maybe prices are at cost of production or below cost of production, depends upon that situation. I mean, $4 type corn may not be a bad sale for a small percentage or maybe some of those extra bushels. And then you could maybe go in and buy some call options to kind of protect that in case this thing would flip on us and go hot and dry and shrink down the yield. And it wouldn't take much to shrink the national average yield 7 bushels. I mean, you get adverse weather for a 2 or 3 week period, it could come down very quickly. So you gotta be a little careful on selling big chunks, but it probably wouldn't, you know how much you have to move at harvest. And rather than just spotting it across the scales, you may want to put some kind of floor on it. You could use a put option, and then you can maybe sell another put option below the money. So you're kind of protecting yourself maybe for a 75-cent dip from here or a dollar dip. And if the market turned around and decided to go a dollar higher, well, then you're in position to take that dollar higher move. So there are ways that you can work with your grain merchandiser, your broker, whoever you work with, to at least, you know, cover some of these extra bushels if indeed Matt's right and we're going to have all these extra bushels to market, because the market's not necessarily going to respect that on cost of production.
Matt, you see how he just blamed you for all the extra bushels?
He did blame me for all the extra bushels.
I don't blame Matt.
And again, you know what? I'm amazed.
Sending these prices is cheap. It's all Matt's doing.
I know. It's my fault.
You're a big man, Matt. You can handle it.
I got big shoulders.
You know, one of the things...
Obviously, I can't manipulate the market, because if I would have, the break wouldn't have happened. So I'm off the hook.
So you're taking no responsibility, right?
No responsibility.
Hey, I wanted to address one thing, though. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about acreage, and I skipped this part of it, and I just was thinking about it. You know, within the report, it did say that we still had 2.1 million acres of corn to plant yet, as of this report. That's 2.3% of the crop. Last year, we had 3.3 million acres to go yet at this time. And on beans, we had 11.2 million acres to plant yet. Last year, we had 20.58 million acres to go at this time. So, you know, of that 11.2, probably 6 million is double crop. So the rest is full season probably. You know, but that at least brings maybe a little more credibility to the report, from the standpoint that they're saying, okay, this is what people said for intentions, but this is reality as to what still has to be planted, and that's dependent on what the weather allowed them to do.
Anything else we ought to cover?
Oh, I'm good right now.
All right.
Yeah, I think we're good.